Okay, hello everyone at the Buddhist Fellowship. This is Ajahn Brahmali from Perth, sitting at the Jhana Grove Retreat Center, and wishing you all a happy Vesak in Singapore. And I hope things are not too difficult in Singapore. I think in the whole world now things are a bit difficult, but I hope you can have a enjoyable Vesak despite all the restrictions and the lockdowns and all the problems that you have. In one sense, if you are a Buddhist, you are, in a sense, I suppose, a bit primed for the idea of solitude and staying by yourself. It's a good time to be a Buddhist because we are, I suppose, more used to these ideas than many other people. So I hope you can enjoy the peace and the quiet and make use of that. It's a very good time at the monastery right now because things are very quiet and peaceful. So we are certainly having a very happy Vesak period over here, that's for sure. So I have been asked by the BF to give a talk on the challenges in the coming decade. And it's a good time to give such a talk. We have just started the present decade, and you could argue we haven't started it in a very good way. It's been a pretty bad start to a decade, not only for the entire world, basically. The whole world is kind of having to bear the brunt of this coronavirus and the difficulties that comes with that. So in some ways, it looks like a bad start, but sometimes you wonder, perhaps that start isn't as bad as sometimes it is made out to be. Yes, there is suffering, but maybe there is also some positive things that come out of these kind of situations. So I want to talk about the challenges of the coming decade. And of course, the first question that often arises when we talk about the challenges or we talk about the future, because this is really talking about the future, is how useful is it to talk about the future anyway? Is it something that we really should be doing? And it always reminds me, when I talk about the future, it reminds me of the famous story with Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah, of course, was Ajahn Brahm's teacher in Thailand. Ajahn Chah was one of the greatest saints in Thailand in the 20th century, an astonishing and amazing character he was. And one of these stories was a day when he was visited by one of the local villagers. And the local villagers was very concerned about the future. He wanted to find out about his future. And he realized that Ajahn Chah had a tremendous reputation for psychic powers and for all kinds of things. And so he wanted to ask Ajahn Chah whether he could say something about his future. So he goes to Ajahn Chah and he says, "Oh, Longpo, please, I'm worried about the future. Can you please foretell my future?" And Ajahn Chah looks at him, and you know what, this very powerful people like monks or sometimes anyone really, what they can be like when they look at you, they can be a very powerful look, as if they can see straight through you or something like that. And he looks at this man and he kind of looks at him, stares at him and says, "Yes, I can tell your future. Please tell my future. I'm really desperate to know my future." "Okay, I'm now looking at you, I'm reading your mind." And Ajahn Chah really kind of makes this strong effort to pretend that he's trying to understand this man's future in a powerful way. And this man gets more and more kind of desperate to hear about his future. And one of the kind of nice things about teachers like Ajahn Chah or any powerful person, often they can be quite theatrical. They can make something out of a very simple situation to make the Dhamma sink in a deeper way. If you make a bit of theater out of things, if you make a bit of, if you know how to create suspense in a sense and a bit of tension in that situation, then very often the Dhamma message becomes much more powerful because of that. Yeah, you know what I mean? How some people are very good at creating that suspense. So Ajahn Chah sort of looks at him. "Yeah, okay, I'm trying to see your future. Please tell me my future." And then Ajahn Chah says to him, "Your future is..." Yes, what is it? "Your future is uncertain." And that's all he says. "Your future is uncertain." And the man, of course, was probably a bit disappointed. That's not exactly what he wanted to hear. This man wanted to hear something more profound. He wanted to hear something about his life. He wanted to hear something about what he needed to do, how he was going to live his life to avoid problems. He wanted to understand more about the happiness and suffering of his own life. And all that Ajahn Chah says is that the future is uncertain. Why did Ajahn Chah do that? And there are many reasons. One of them is that, you know, you cannot go around telling the future of everybody. And I don't know if it is even possible to tell the future in that way. If you read the suttas and you see what the Buddha has to say about these things, the Buddha never talks about the future. He never really says anything about, you know, people and where they're going to be and what's going to happen to them and all of that kind of stuff. And so this is probably one reason. Yeah, you just don't. It may not be possible really to predict people's future because the future is so incredibly complex, with so many causes and conditions going into it. It's very hard to really make it all gel and come out as a predictive thing, as one thing actually going to happen. But I think the other thing, the other reason why Ajahn Chah did this, is that very often thinking about the future is a waste of time. Yeah, the future is so unpredictable and so uncertain. We never actually know where it's going to go. The number of causes and conditions going into it are so complex that even trying to find out about the future actually very often amounts to no more than guesswork. And because it is guesswork, and because it is problematic, and because it doesn't really work out, sometimes it is more powerful just to remember some of those profound teachings of the Buddha, like impermanence, like uncertainty, like unreliability. Much more important to remember the overall framework rather than to try to specify a specific future which is relevant for you as a person. And I think this is the main substance of Ajahn Chah's teaching in this particular case. Remember the Dhamma. The Dhamma is what is going to take you forward. Forget about the specifics of life because they don't actually matter so much. So very interesting the way Ajahn Chah does this. I think it was a very powerful lesson, hopefully for that man, and it showed him something about how to live your life, how to think about life, and how to avoid the pitfalls of our existence. And when we talk about the future in the next decade, the challenges that come for Buddhism or for ourselves personally over the next few years, it is important to remember this, that we should be careful how we think about the future. It is not necessarily wrong to think about the future altogether. Sometimes in the suttas, the Buddha talks about the future, not in a specific way, which I just said before, he never talks about the future in a specific way, but he talks about the future in a more general sense. You may recall perhaps that in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, the Buddha gives the monastics and everyone a teaching on what will support Buddhism for the future. Yeah, he talks about the seven things that will support Buddhism in the future. So he does give guidance about the future, but it's in terms of very general teachings rather than specifics about what's going to happen to people. So there is a right way of talking about the future, and there is a wrong way of talking about the future. And the wrong way of thinking about the future is when we think about the future based on fear. And a large part of what people do when they want to know about the future, when they want to control the environment around them or control their lives, and this is exactly what happened to this man when he came to Ajahn Chah, coming to Ajahn Chah, basically he was coming from fear. He was concerned about his life. Something was perhaps not going right. He was worried about who knows what. But there are so many things that can go wrong in life. So he was worrying about some of those things. And he was coming from fear. And that is the wrong way of thinking about the future. So Ajahn Chah then instead gave him this general Dhamma teaching instead. So fear is the problem. In these times when there is such a massive problem in the world with the coronavirus going around, there is, of course, a lot of fear that is to be expected when things are going wrong in the world or apparently going wrong. You can expect people to be frightened. And of course, people are frightened and anxious for all sorts of reasons. People don't want to get sick. People don't want to die, even though the chances of dying from this coronavirus is very small. Still, people are obviously afraid of death, especially if you are in one of the vulnerable groups. Then there, you know, maybe there is a little bit more chance that you will die in those circumstances. But there's all kind of other things as well. A lot of people are feeling the psychological challenges of staying by themselves around the world when you have a complete lockdown with your family and you're forced to stay with people all the time. And many people find it very, very challenging. And hopefully, some of you, if you have a little bit of meditation practice, hopefully that will help you to enjoy the solitude and the isolation a little bit when you have to stay back home. Hopefully you can make better use of that time because of that little bit of training in how to deal with the quiet, deal with the, you know, the staying by yourself. For some of you, it may still be harder, but hopefully for some of you, it will be useful. But a lot of anxiety in the world because of that. And then, of course, you have the economic situation, and people are talking about the, you know, problems for the economy, the world economy, also the private economies of people. People seeing all kinds of economic consequences also coming from the coronavirus. So there's a lot to focus on, many things that can potentially go wrong, many things in life that may turn out bad. And all of that, when you look at all of those things, what does it come down to? Well, it comes down to fear. It comes about the uncertainty of the future. It comes down to being anxious about life and all the bad things that can and may go wrong in the future. So, but from a Buddhist point of view, and this is what is so interesting about Buddhism, is that our future is not really determined by things like the coronavirus. The coronavirus is just one more kind of suffering that we have to go through. It's a big suffering. It affects a lot of people. And for that reason, it's a big thing around the world. But still, it is only one of those things that arises and then passes away again. It's only a temporary problem, and eventually it will be gone. In Buddhism, there is something else that is far more important for our future than whether there is a coronavirus or not, whether there is some temporary suffering happening in our lives. And that bigger picture, of course, is how we are as human beings. Whether we live well or not, whether we have kind hearts or not, whether we are compassionate and caring to the world around us, that is what really matters. And this is what we should be focusing on. Because if we are kind, if we are caring, if we are wise in how we live our lives, that is what is going to give rise to a good future. So sometimes, as human beings, it is kind of astonishing how we focus on things in the wrong way. We fear the coronavirus. A lot of people fear the coronavirus, but they don't fear the idea of living in a bad way. A lot of people may live in a bad way. They don't fear that, but they fear the coronavirus. Actually, the Buddhist approach is the other way around. What we should really fear is living our lives in a bad way, not having the kindness and the compassion and the care, not having all these good qualities. That is what we should fear. Whereas the coronavirus is just a blip, it's just a small spike on the graph of our life going bad for a while. Then it comes down again. That is not really where the problem lies. And when we think about life in that way, then actually the surprising thing is that the coronavirus, it has a massive silver lining. Yeah, the cloud of the coronavirus actually has a very large silver lining around it. In fact, arguably, you could argue that the entire cloud is silver and the lining is only, the lining is what is gray and the main part of the cloud is actually silver. Why is that? Why is it that the coronavirus actually is so such a positive thing? And one reason for that, and this is something that you can read in the news around the world, is that sometimes these difficult times, it often brings out the very best in people. Yeah, have you noticed how people's kindness often comes out in times of difficulty? You see that around the world with people supporting each other, with people doing errands for the old people and helping the old people out because they are often the ones that are worst affected by these big problems, these pandemics. You see the goodness coming out when people are clapping for the NHS, the National Health Service in England. You see the goodness coming out when people are coming out on the verandas in Italy and supporting each other and having a laugh together. And also you see it right here at Bodhinyana Monastery in Perth. One of the remarkable things is that every day in our monastery here, we are getting enormous amount of support from the people in Perth. Every day we have a large number of people driving all the way from Perth, coming to our monastery. And these days, when you come to our monastery, you can't really stop. You can't chat to anyone. You can't enter any buildings. You can't listen to Ajahn Brahm's jokes or anything like that. Yeah, there's no time for any jokes. I think many people come to the monastery just to have a good time, yeah, to listen to Ajahn Brahm tell some of his stories and just mess around a little bit and have a good time. And then, of course, when you go back home, you feel much more light and happy afterwards because you've been in the presence of someone with a light and bright heart. And that lightens up your life as well when you are in the presence of people like that. But there's nothing of that now. When you come to the monastery now, you come to the monastery, you drop off your food, yeah? You can't even go inside the buildings. You drop it off outside. There will be a monk there, usually Ajahn Brahm. He will give you a quick blessing. And then you go back into your car and you drive all the way back to Perth. Another hour, for some people, more than an hour back to Perth again. And people do this. And people do this in quite substantial numbers. I think in some ways we're getting more support now during the coronavirus than we get outside when it is normal times, when you can come and chat to your friends and you can come and listen to Ajahn Brahm and you can have a chat to the monks if you want as well. Yeah, in normal times when everything is open, there's probably less people coming to the monastery. And it's such a wonderful thing, the kind of support we are getting. A large amount of food coming in. People are even donating more online to support the monastery in case we haven't got enough to, you know, come being donated. At least we have some backup money, finances, so we can send maybe one of the Anagarikas, even go shopping if really required. So lots of kindness coming out of the coronavirus situation. And what a marvelous thing that is. And when I also look at the world and I see all the people suffering, it is very hard not to feel compassion for the world. Yeah, people suffering so much, not understanding that this is the nature of existence, not knowing how to deal with these things, not having a spiritual path that takes you out of these problems, being deluded, being in darkness. How can you not have compassion for the world in times like this? So the beautiful thing about this is that it tends to bring out the best qualities in people. And especially for us who are Buddhist and practicing the Buddhist way, it's a massive opportunity to allow the good qualities to come out and for us to become better people as a consequence. And of course, the paradox is that if the coronavirus does make us into better people, then our future also becomes better. Our future becomes more bright. And then there is even less reason for being fearful and anxious about the future, because all the things that really matter for the future are built up. And they are built up in part because of the coronavirus. So isn't that kind of astonishing? From looking at the world in that way, you're turning the coronavirus from being something terrible and nasty, and you're turning it into something that has a very large component of something positive going on with it. The coronavirus can often have a very positive effect in our lives. And what a marvelous thing that is. I think this is a general truth of our existence, that when we have difficulties and problems in life, very often it brings out the best in people. And this is something to think about. Yeah, we're always fearful about the difficulties and problems. But sometimes we should be more fearful of the times when there are no problems in the world, because that can make us complacent. It can make us deluded when there are no problems. We forget about the nature of reality. But when there are problems, actually, it can be very powerful. And I will give you another example of this. This was many years ago. I read a book. This must be now probably 30 years ago, maybe more than 30 years ago. I read a book about human happiness. It was called Human Beings and Happiness. And this book was written by a man in 1945. 1945 was just after the Second World War had ended. Yeah, and this man, he was reflecting on the Second World War and reflecting on happiness in conjunction with the Second World War. So very interesting in many ways. Of course, if you read about the Second World War in the history books, all you will really read about in the history books is about all the negativity, all the tens of millions of people who were killed. I think the estimate is that almost 100 million people were killed during the Second World War. And of course, the amount of destruction around the world was just enormous. So a lot, very, very problematic, and a lot of suffering, of course, from the Second World War. But what this man was saying, which was very, very interesting, yeah, this man, he had just lived through the Second World War. He had just felt the Second World War. He knew exactly what he was like, what it was like. And he was saying that for many people, the Second World War was actually a time of great happiness. And he called this the paradox of happiness. When everyone thinks that this is a time of suffering, actually, there was a very large component of happiness in people's lives. Isn't that kind of astonishing? So why? Why is it the case? And he explained that the reason why there was so much happiness during the Second World War was because at this time, there was a very powerful sense of companionship among people. People were coming together, people were caring for each other, people were felt that there was a common purpose in life, a very strong sense of meaning. Yeah, the meaning was that we have been invaded as a country, and now we have to kind of make sure that we make the most out of this situation, that we try to live together, that we cooperate so we can overcome this problem of the Second World War. It didn't necessarily mean to fight. There wasn't all that much fighting going on in Norway, but it meant coming together and working together so we can overcome this problem of the occupation. There was a sense of comradeship. There was a sense of common purpose. There was a sense of caring for each other. That was very, very tangible, he said, during the Second World War, far more so than outside of the Second World War. Yeah, so sometimes when the externals of our life are very difficult, when people are getting killed, when our material well-being is being undermined, when our infrastructure is being blown up, when people are being sent to concentration camps, and all of these terrible things, there's something else that comes out, and that is our inner qualities start to come out instead. So despite, or maybe precisely because of, all those external problems, we find the internal, the psychological resources inside of us, they become built up, they become much more powerful, precisely because of the external problems. And the amazing thing is that leads to a life of more quality, a life which is far richer, a life which is far more purposeful and meaningful than the life that we normally have. And that is very, very interesting, because it shows us something about why and how it is that Buddhism works. Yeah, Buddhism is all about developing our inner qualities. It's all about developing these inner things inside of us. And these inner qualities, through this experience in the Second World War, it shows you that these inner qualities are far more important for our happiness, for our contentment, for our satisfaction, for our meaning in life than all the external things that we have. So this is where we should focus. This is what really matters. And if we focus on those inner qualities, then the external world cannot touch us anymore in quite the same way. This is the lesson that came from that observation from this man who had lived through the Second World War and talking about human happiness in times of adversity and difficulty. And hopefully we can use that lesson a little bit also in our own life to make sure right now that during the difficult times of COVID-19, we also can make something positive out of these difficult times in the same way that people have done probably since the beginning of time when things actually became difficult. So that is a little bit about the wrong way and also a bit about the right way of thinking about the future. Yeah, the wrong way is thinking about it from a sense of fear. And the right way really is to think about it in a sense of opportunity within the problem. And the opportunity is always there if we look at it in the right way. So what is the right way of looking at the future? If we're going to talk about the future in a slightly broader sense, or we're going to look at it from a more kind of complete point of view, what is the right way of thinking about the future? If fear is the wrong way, can we say something simple about the right way of thinking about the future? And I would say that one of the most basic right ways of thinking about the future is to think about the future and incorporate right view into the way we think about the future. When we bring right view into it, then we are thinking about the future in the right way. Then we understand the idea of the future in the right way. This comes back to the way Ajahn Chah was teaching that man again. Yeah, the idea that your future is uncertain, your future is impermanent, your future is unreliable. That is exactly what that is about. It's about bringing the idea of right view into how you think about the future. So before I go on to talk a little bit more about the right view and the future, let us very briefly dwell on wrong view, and see what it means to think about the future in the wrong way. We've already been talking about fear, but more generally, or in addition to the idea of fear, there are other ways of having wrong view about the future. And you may have noticed when you look at the way people talk right now about the coronavirus, very often they talk about the future, and very often they will say things like, once the coronavirus is over, there will be a changed world. Yeah, the world won't be the same anymore. And sometimes they talk about the negative consequences, and other times they talk about the positive consequences, yeah, that there will be some positive outcomes of the coronavirus situation. Maybe that we are more prepared next time there is a pandemic. Maybe that we understand more how to look after the world in the proper way. Maybe that it will have positive effects on climate change. All of these kind of things people are talking about. To me, that actually is an example of wrong view. Yeah? Maybe that comes as a surprise to you, that this should be an example of wrong view, because it may not be obvious at all. But I think it is an example of wrong view. The idea that once we come out of coronavirus, there will be some positive thing coming out of that. Because in my experience, that is not how the world works. The way the world works is that you stay with the coronavirus. We have this problem for a while. And then after the pandemic is over, of course, that feeling, that suffering will be imprinted in your mind for a while. So for a few months, a few years after the pandemic, we will still remember it. And because we still remember it, it will still have an impact on how we live. And we may live in a more caring, in a more wise fashion for a while. But in my experience, what happens with human beings is that we forget so quickly. Yeah, a few, maybe years after the pandemic is over, we will have forgotten everything about it. The lessons that we are supposed to have learned through this pandemic will have completely been eliminated. The lessons will no longer be there. And the reason why this happens is because once the pandemic is over, once we come back to our ordinary life again, we start attaching, we start indulging in the ordinary things of life, we start enjoying ourselves with the ordinary things of the world. And as we start to indulge, as we start to crave for things, as we start to attach to the things of the world, we start to get deluded, we get intoxicated, as the Buddha says. And as we get intoxicated, one of the consequences of intoxication is precisely delusion. This is one of those fascinating things that the Buddha talks about in the suttas. Intoxication is not just about alcohol or drugs in the suttas, especially alcohol. Intoxication can come from so many different kinds of sources. The Buddha talks about being intoxicated by life. Yeah, I'm life. I can mess around. I can enjoy myself. I can do all kinds of things. And when you get intoxicated by life, you get intoxicated by youth, you get intoxicated by being strong and powerful, you can do whatever you want, then of course you start forgetting about the reality of existence, because you only remember the upside and you forget the downside. And one of the intoxications that the Buddha talks about is the intoxication of indulging in the sensualities of the world. And as we get intoxicated by that, we forget the downside of our existence. And I can almost guarantee, and we know from history that this is exactly how people work, when the coronavirus is over, it won't be long because we go back to our ordinary intoxicated ways and we forget about the lessons that we're supposed to have learned from the coronavirus. And then, of course, next time the coronavirus comes around, and by coronavirus here, I use coronavirus as a metaphor. It's a metaphor for all the problems of life. The next time another coronavirus comes around, another war, another tragedy in our family, another illness, whatever it is, we will not be prepared, and we have to go through exactly the same suffering again, because we haven't really learned anything from the coronavirus this time around. And if you look at human history again, you know that this is exactly how human beings work. If you look, for example, at the example again of the Second World War, very interesting. One of the things that people said after the Second World War, because the destruction was so massive, because the loss of human life was so enormous, because it affected so many people in so many bad ways. People said at the end of the Second World War, never again. We want to ensure that we build up a society where this kind of catastrophe, this kind of massive suffering for all of humanity can be avoided in the future. And so what did they do? So what they did was they set up, you know, organizations like the United Nations, for example. United Nations was specifically set up to make us cooperate more. Very hard to make humanity cooperate. We always like to argue with each other and get into conflict with each other. But the United Nations was set up to make us cooperate more. And what a wonderful idea that really is, to do that. And then you had in Europe, Europe was probably one of the places where the Second World War was really, really bad, one of the worst places in the world, tens of millions of people dying just within Europe. And so what they did in Europe was they established a European Union, or before that it was had a different name at that time, and that was established back in the 1950s. And the very purpose of the European Union was also to avoid similar catastrophes in the future, such as the Second World War. That was one of the main purposes of it. And it has worked very well. It has been quite peaceful in Europe over the last seven decades. So it has actually worked quite well. It has sort of fulfilled its purpose, the idea of the European Union. But you can see how that memory of the Second World War now is fading away. All the people who experienced the Second World War are pretty much dead now. There's only a few people left that maybe experienced the Second World War in their childhood, but there's very few people left who actually remember the Second World War properly. And as the memory of these catastrophes fade into the background, you can see that we don't really value the institutions that keep peace in the world. You can see how the United Nations is being undermined. You see this all the time by, you know, the World Health Organization being attacked by politicians around the world sometimes. And as we undermine these organizations that actually bring us together, we're also undermining the peace in the world. To me, it is an anti-Buddhist approach to undermine this large organization that create harmony in the world, that bring us together. Undermining these things means that it's much more difficult for us to cooperate and create harmony in the world. It's a kind of an anti-Buddhist approach, as far as I can see. And not just the United Nations, we see the same problems in Europe. We see the idea of the European Union being undermined. We've just been through the Brexit thing in the UK. And that is a similar kind of thing. It's undermining of the institutions that bring us together and makes harmony possible. And I think that this too goes really against Buddhist principles, where we really need to work together to create harmony in the world and to actually work problems out together. So again, we forget the lessons from the past. We forget these ideas and we start to become more aggressive and more harsh towards each other. And eventually, if we keep on being aggressive and harsh with each other, eventually it leads back to the same problems of the past. It leads back to war. It leads back to being belligerent. It leads back to all of these things that actually have been problematic throughout human history. And this is where eventually it all goes. We don't really learn. And this is the problem. And in fact, I would go so far as to say that we cannot really learn. It is almost impossible. Why? Because it is in our nature that we are intoxicated by the present moment. We are intoxicated by the pleasures of the world. So we will always tend to forget. It's impossible for us to fully remember. This idea that we need to remember our past, this was encapsulated by a European philosopher. It was first spoken by a Spanish philosopher. And this idea that probably many of you may have heard, because it's quite a famous saying around the world, and the saying that those who don't remember their past, they are bound to repeat their mistakes. Sometimes it is said that something like that anyway. I think that's close enough. If you forget your past, you're bound to repeat your mistakes. On the surface of it, it seems very wise. Yeah, it seems to be one of those things that the philosophers of the world have found out that is very wise and very useful and something we can use in our kind of world to make sure the world is a better place. So on the surface of it, it is very wise. But if you look at these things, and this is one of the things I often recommend people to do, is that when you hear these so-called wise sayings, worldly sayings, it is very important to look at them in a deeper way. Because very often what you will find is that from a Buddhist point of view, these so-called wise sayings in the world, they are actually flawed. Yeah, there is some truth that, of course, and that is why we believe in these things. If you don't learn from your past, you are condemned to repeat the mistakes of the past. Obviously, there's some truth to that, but there's also a fundamental weakness to this idea. And the weakness is the purpose of that kind of saying is to say, of course, to give people a sense of hope. The idea of this saying is to give people a sense of hope that, well, all we have to do is to remember our past. So let us try as hard as we possibly can to remember our past so that we don't make the same mistakes in the future. That is the underlying kind of understanding, I think, of that kind of philosophy. It is based on the idea that we can change things if only we think about the world in the right way. That is the purpose of these kind of philosophical statements. But I question that very idea of whether we really are capable of learning from our past. If we are capable, then it is only in a very limited way. We remember things for a while, but eventually the intoxications of the world come back to us and they overpower us, and we forget about the realities of the way things actually are. And this is the weakness in this statement of learning about the past, because really we cannot really do it. And this is such a, I think, a very interesting idea, something that I have learned from Ajahn Brahm also very much, the idea of always challenging some of these worldly sayings, understanding their limitations. Because even a philosopher which comes up with that kind of apparently profound saying, they too are bound by the ordinary human limitations of attachments, of desires for the things in the world. And because they are bound by those things, they too will be deluded to some extent. They will see the world through biases and a narrow way of looking at the world. And they will not really be able to see the world with the kind of clarity that we are demanding on the Buddhist path. So this particular philosopher, when he came up with this saying, he too would have had attachments to the world. So he was trying to find a solution, and that solution was to remember your past, because then you will not make the same mistakes in the future. But I think, again, that doesn't really work from a Buddhist point of view. We can only learn so much from the past, and then actually it turns out that eventually we have to make the same mistakes again. And this is true in part because we get intoxicated. It is also true because the Buddhist worldview is a cyclical worldview. We don't actually go forward all the time towards a better future. Sometimes we come back to where we started out. The idea of cyclicality is a very Buddhist idea. You come back roughly to where you started out, and you go round and round and round. And when you go round and round and round, it means that you're not really making any progress. You're not really going anywhere. That is the problem, yeah? And that is why these kind of philosophies don't work. So I would recommend you, when you hear these wise kind of philosophical sayings in the world, scrutinize them, look at them from a Buddhist point of view, understand that very often they have limitations. There is some truth to them, but the truth only goes so far. So I hope you are not all getting too depressed. Maybe my talk is getting very dark and very negative and looking at all the problems. But of course, whenever there is a problem in the world, the reality, there's also a solution. Yeah, and this, of course, is kind of the Buddhist point of view here. So it's not all I've been doing now is pointing out all the problems. And I hope it doesn't drag you down and make you even more depressed on this Vaisak day. So to balance out looking at all the negative, I will now look a little bit more at the positive side of things. So that is the wrong view, yeah? The idea that the future somehow will be better, that it will somehow improve. Actually, it is not going to be like that. And the right way of thinking about the future, the right view that we should bring with us when we look at the challenges of the next decade, which is the topic of this talk, is that we should remember what the Buddha has to say about these things. And one of those fundamental things that the Buddha has to say, which is part and parcel of the idea of right view, found in the Four Noble Truths, yeah? First Noble Truth, the Noble Truth of suffering, and within that Noble Truth you have the idea that illness is suffering, vyadi pidukka, illness is suffering, yeah? And the Buddha, so the idea in Buddhism is that illness is suffering is an aspect of right view. And what that means, yeah, and this is such an important thing to remember. Yes, we all know that illness is suffering. What it means is something much more profound than that. What it means is that illness is part and parcel of human existence. It is something that you cannot really get away from. When there is health, there's also going to be illness. Illness and health always have to go hand in hand. And this is really what the idea of illness is suffering actually means on the as part of the right view. And when you remember that, when you remember that illness always have to come and be part of our life, then you also know that in the future, when you look down the track, you know that after the coronavirus is finished, it is not as if it is all going to be happiness and health after that. There will be another coronavirus down the track. There will be more problems in your life after the coronavirus is finished. These things always return. In fact, the right way of thinking about it is to remember that the illness, the problems of the world are always there, right under the surface. They are so close to us. Yeah, it's almost as if they are part and parcel of us already. And just all you need is you need the right conditions and the right circumstances, and then they come back out again, and then they resurface, and then there is more problems in the future. So the right way of thinking about the future is to remember that this is only one example right now, the coronavirus that we have now, and these things tend to recur at regular intervals down the track, whether it is the coronavirus of personal problems, whether it is the coronavirus of the loved ones being sick and dying, it is the coronavirus of the wars in the world, the coronavirus of economic problems, the coronavirus of climate change. All of these things are bound to happen again in the future. And that is the right way of thinking about it. And that way of thinking about the world is actually very, very powerful. Because when you think about the world in that way, it starts to change your attitude to things. You start to live life in a different way. You start to understand the limitations of our human existence. That is an insight. That is right understanding. That is right view. And when you do that, you start to emphasize the spiritual qualities in your life far, far more. If the external world is always problematic, if you know you can never find that happiness in the external world, then it is always useful to come back to the spiritual qualities, because you know that is where you can actually make a difference. It is building up your mind, building up the inner qualities. Just like the story I said before with the Second World War, even when everything else is collapsing around you, you can find that much more important happiness within by focusing on the spiritual qualities instead. That is what happens when you have right view about the world. So don't allow yourself, when the coronavirus is over, don't allow yourself to become oblivious of the reality of life. Don't allow yourself to forget the lessons of the past, the coronavirus of the past. Bring that with you into the future. Don't do what everybody else does, allowing yourself to be intoxicated. Bring the right view with you into the future. And this is why right view matters so enormously on the Buddhist path, because instead of just remembering, instead of forgetting about the suffering, the reality of life, we bring that with us into the future. And this is what enables us on the spiritual path. It allows us to practice in the right way, and it makes our life worthwhile in a far, far more profound sense than what life normally allows you to live. And this becomes the beautiful outcome of the coronavirus. It becomes the beautiful outcome of all the problems in the world, where we turn our life in a positive direction. We become more caring and kind. We become far better people as a consequence. And this is the beautiful thing. And this is the sort of thing we should remember on this Vaisak day, when we need to remind ourselves of the Buddha and also the teachings of the Buddha. I like to very briefly bring up a couple of more issues. The first issue I just like to bring up very briefly is another idea, which is the right part of the right view in Buddhism. And that because we're talking about the future and right view and the future and the lessons to be learned maybe for the decade ahead of us, one of the things the Buddha says in the suttas, which is very fascinating, is how uncertain even the Dhamma, even the teachings of the Buddha actually is, how the Dhamma is always declining, how it is always moving towards a getting more and more corrupted and eventually disappearing from the world. And of course, the reason why the Buddha says this is because he wants us to be inspired to do the practice now. Now is the opportunity we have. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. And because we're talking about the next decade ahead of us, the challenges for the next decade, I just wanted to remind you very briefly that the things that we can expect in the next decade is for some of the most beloved Dhamma teachers in the world, very likely that some of those people will pass away over the next decade. I always try to remind myself that some of the teachers that I put the highest in this world, and those teachers obviously include people like Ajahn Brahm. They also include some of the teachers that you find in Thailand, people like Lumpur Ganha, for example, people like Lumpur Liem, the abbot of Wat Pa Pong. Some of these people are very, very inspiring and very powerful to be in their presence. But if you look at them, they are all getting very old. Yeah, some of the people that we hold on to, that we rely on for our refuge, that we rely on to ensure that we can practice Dhamma in the future, their life is actually starting to look quite shaky. I would be very surprised if all of these three monks, Lumpur Liem, he also had lots of health problems already, Ajahn Ganha, lots of health problems, Ajahn Brahm is in a little bit better shape, yeah, but still, Ajahn Brahm also has certain disadvantages. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to go into details, but things like gaining weight and all of these kind of things. So, very likely, yeah, these people, so at least one of these three people, maybe two of them, maybe all three, will pass away during the next decade. What does that mean? And what it means, it shows you that some of the refuge that we have in life will be taken away from us. And for many of us, it will be a very, very powerful experience when the closest teachers that we have, when they pass away. It will be a little bit like when the Buddha passed away. And when you remember when the Buddha passed away, it was an incredibly difficult time for the Buddhist community. If you read the wonderful Mahaparinibbana Sutta that talks about the Buddha's passing away, people are desperate. They are rolling around on the ground. They are crying. They are tearing out their hair. They are grieving in a very massive way at that particular time. It was only the arahants that didn't actually cry or despair at that time. And it's going to be a little bit like that for us when some of the great teachers of the present day pass away. Will there be new teachers taking their place? Sure, there will always be new teachers taking their place. But sometimes we don't know who they are. We don't know whether they will be equally great. We don't know when they will come around, whether it will be in our lifetime or whatever. So regardless of what happens, it is going to be very hard. So remember that. Remember the uncertainty again of the future. And when you remember that, you understand now is really the opportunity. The future is uncertain. All of these things are bound to be impermanent. And because they are bound to be impermanent, we take the opportunity right away to do what is good, to do what is right. And we make these perceptions of the uncertainty of the future into something positive in our life that propels us forward on the path and gives us an extra momentum to practice in the right way. So this is what it is all about. And when we live life in this way, when we live life to the best of our ability, when we have that right view about the problems of the world, of the uncertainty of the future, that we never know what's going to happen around the corner, we then emphasize the spiritual life so much more. And when we emphasize the spiritual life so much more, what we are doing essentially by being kind, by being beautiful people, we're shining up that beautiful diamond inside of us. It is as if we are carrying around a diamond in our heart, this beautiful brightness that is there, and we are shining it up by being kind, by being caring, by being compassionate, by being wise, by doing a bit of meditation practice, and by shining it up, we're brightening up our mind inside. Another beautiful metaphor or simile actually used by the Buddha is the simile of gold. Yeah, the gold inside of us, the gold inside of us again is our mind. And as we live our life well, we are brightening up that gold inside. We are removing the defilements of the mind. And as we do remove the defilements from the gold inside, the gold becomes more and more shiny, more and more bright, more and more beautiful. In the same way it is with our lives and our minds. We become beautiful, bright and shining people in the world as we practice this path. And what a wonderful thing that is, if that is the outcome of the difficulties that we have in life, because we turn in a new direction and we become a powerful source of happiness for ourselves and also for the people around us as a consequence. That is the right view. That is the right way to think about life on this Vaisak day. So I wish you all a very happy Vaisak. I wish you all the happiness and contentment that the Buddhist path can give you. And I hope you can make a difficult situation into a very beautiful one. If you can do that, then you really understand what Buddhism is all about. Happy Vaisak to everyone, and bye-bye for now.